We're covering the international talks on Iran's nuclear program, which resumed today in Geneva.
And these talks are part of the ongoing effort aimed at curbing Iran's nuclear ambitions.
Hilary Mann Leverett is with us now. She's with American University School of International Service. She's also the co-author of the book Going to Tehran, Why the United States Must Come to Terms with the Islamic Republic of Iran. Hilary, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
So 2 weeks ago, the international community couldn't agree on terms with Iran. Now those talks are resuming. How close are they to a deal, do you think?
They're closer than they have been for over 10 years, which is when I started working on it at the White House during the Bush administration. We are closer now than we've ever been. And I think in terms of the negotiators, we actually have on both sides the most promising team of negotiators. On the Iranian side, we have both a president and foreign minister who have PhDs from Western universities in international law. The foreign minister has his PhD in international law from the University of Denver. And on the American side, we have Wendy Sherman in particular. She's our Undersecretary of State, and she's a very experienced negotiator. She dealt for years with the Koreans in the Clinton administration. Very serious, focused, very, very smart person. I think if there is a deal to be had, and I think there certainly is one within the legal framework of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, this group of negotiators could get it.
Now, in between the time when the talks ended and now, there has been some rhetoric flying. There have been critics who have been using the opportunity to voice their concerns, including Israel and France in the past. They've been outspoken on this, along with some hawks in the United States. What are their concerns?
Well, their concerns very broadly are really the emerging power of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And for the Israelis and the Saudis, who have very similar concerns in this regard, the emerging power of the Islamic Republic of Iran in its nuclear power, its military power, its economic power, its political persuasion throughout the region is a direct challenge to their national security strategies in terms of how they deal with their neighbors in the region. So broadly, that's what's at stake for them. Even for a country like France, an emerging power like Iran or Turkey or China is threatening because France, in a lot of ways, is a power in decline and has very little other justification, really, to claim its Security Council seat at the United Nations other than it's a nuclear power. So for all of these countries that are opposed, there's a certain concern really grounded in competition for power and not so much a concern that someone's going to wipe someone off the map or destroy another country with nuclear weapons.
Well, some of the rhetoric, to talk a little bit more about that has been coming out in the meantime, it's been pretty intense, some of it very pointed, you could call it nasty, and I'm curious if you think whether that rhetoric is going to affect the negotiations going forward.
Well, I think actually, surprisingly in some ways, the most striking change in the rhetoric is from the Iranian side. I had the opportunity to meet with the Iranian leadership in New York when they were here to address the UN General Assembly in September and to go to Tehran. They've made a determination not to allow the type of rhetoric that their previous government under President Ahmadinejad spoke about. They're determined to not let that rhetoric be an excuse for Iran going forward in a variety of areas, including the nuclear area. So we've seen the foreign minister of Iran, the Islamic Republic, actually tweet in Jewish New Year's greetings to the Jewish community of the world, a very striking change in rhetoric. Just last night, the Iranian foreign minister put up his own YouTube video pleading for the international community to give peace a chance, that there really was a different way out other than war and never-ending cycles of war. It's a striking, striking video. So the real change has come. We'll always, of course, remember the strident rhetoric coming out of Iran. But the real change, I think, is coming in terms of the marked positive tone of it at this stage.
And Iran has been, sort of helping itself along in terms of rhetoric in how it views itself. One of the terms that's come out recently in going forward is the term heroic flexibility, and that, this could be the new stance that Iran takes as it moves forward with nuclear talks.
Yes, I mean, it's an interesting phrase. It's actually an older one that the founder of the Islamic Republic, Ayatollah Khomeini, said many years ago, and then the new Supreme Leader, relatively new compared to him, Supreme Leader Khamenei, also said several years ago, but they haven't said it for a long time. And I think it does, it is another important indicator of their determination to do whatever is possible from their side to dial down the rhetoric, give a negotiated outcome in diplomacy whatever chance possible. And it's not just because they've become good overnight. It's a real strategy, and the strategy is that if they can show they've done everything they could, they've gone the extra mile in terms of being reasonable and working within an international legal framework, then even if the United States can't go along in the end because of our hardliners or the Israelis or whoever, that the rest of the international community can work more constructively with Iran. And that's what's really important to them, as the, you know, kind of ground zero in oil diplomacy and petrodollars and all of the economics and power associated with oil is shifting from the United States east toward China and India. That's where their eye is. So even if they can't get a deal with the United States in Geneva today or tomorrow, their goal is to do whatever they can to be as reasonable as possible and open up the rest of the world.
Now, Iran has insisted that it has the right to enrich uranium and it is building a heavy water reactor. How does the proposed deal, as we know about it, affect those areas?
Those are two of the remaining very important sticking points. I mean, for many analysts, they couldn't even fathom that we would be where we were today 6 months ago. But literally, within the past 6 months, negotiators have been able to really whittle down the concerns that remain to be negotiated to three. One of them is this issue about the right to enrich uranium. The Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, which the United States has signed and Iran has signed, Iran signed it as a non-nuclear weapon state, the U.S. as a weapon state. In that treaty, there is a recognition of every state's inalienable right to produce and use nuclear power. This is what Iran has really focused on. It doesn't want to give that up. It doesn't want that to be a decision made by the United States, that if Iran is doing a good thing today or a bad thing tomorrow, it can be taken away. This has been a core concern, and I think if there is no agreement, it will be because the negotiators could not find a way to address Iran's rights in this regard without ceding our position, the U.S. position, that no country really has this right. So that's the main sticking point. The other one that I think is a bit of a sideshow that's been put out there, particularly by the French, is this issue of the heavy water reactor at a place called Arak in Iran. The reason I say this is not really an issue is that this power plant and reactor cannot come online for at least a year. So this agreement that they're working on now is just a first step. It's just to cover 6 months. So easily, lawyers could come up with language that Iran is not going to work on the reactor during the 6 months, is not going to start work, is not going to continue work. They could come up with all sorts of words to massage it. It's not a real issue. I think it's being put out there by people who don't want an agreement.
So in return for concessions, Iran would see a loosening on sanctions. And now the deal on the table is still largely being kept under wraps. But do you have a sense of how important it is for Iran to come out from under these sanctions a bit?
They would very much like to come out from under sanctions. They are a tremendously wealthy country with enormous, enormous hydrocarbon resources. If you count their natural gas and their oil, they have more hydrocarbons than Saudi Arabia does. So we're talking about a huge amount of resources that can be monetized and really increase the standard of living for the population. That said, they have their eye on a long-term goal, which is to get the international community, not necessarily the United States, but get the international community not to be tied to these U.S. Appointed sanctions. Now, if they can do it because the United States is going to lift them, that's great. That's their first choice. They'd like to have a more normal relationship with the United States. But if they have to do it in a way where the U.S. doesn't enforce them as much or doesn't add any new ones, that's also a win for them, because what they're looking for is more investment and more trade from China, from Korea, from India. So that's what, you know, that's what they're looking for. They're not pushing for the Obama administration to make huge cuts in the sanctions that the administration can't do anyway.
Now, this is an interim deal that we're looking at right now. It's not the whole thing. But if the six world powers accept this interim deal, what are the bigger fish that they might be after down the road?
Well, for Iran, it is really to come out from under the sanctions, to be able to have its economy fully integrated with the international economy, have its hydrocarbons fully traded and monetized, for them to have a full-fledged commercial nuclear program where they can even sell power plants to Iraq, to Lebanon, to other countries in their neighborhood. So they're very much looking at it in terms of economic and scientific development. For the United States, it's about trying to control. I think, you know, if we take the U.S. position at its word and at its word, they're looking to really curtail the diffusion of nuclear know-how and fuel cycle capabilities in order to stem the risk of proliferation for nuclear weapons. And this is where they see Iran as an important case. Now, the reason why I say if we take their word for it, the reason why we should have some skepticism with our own government is that that's not how we treat India. You know, we let India, with a full-scale nuclear weapons program, have an agreement with us for the trade in nuclear technology. We're negotiating right now with Vietnam to have the full fuel cycle capability and reprocessing facilities. So it's something where, you know, I'll take my government's word for it for now, that we're really out to make sure that there's as little proliferation of nuclear weapons as possible, but there are some serious other cases of double standard that we should all take seriously.
All right, and we'll leave it there. Hillary, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Hillary Mann Leverett with American University School of International Service. She's also the co-author of Going to Tehran, Why the United States Must Come to Terms with the Islamic Republic of Iran.